and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast,
episode 577,
the Halloween episode.
Woo!
It's midnight, the podcasting hour.
Maybe I'll see if I can dig out some spooky sound effects.
Oh man, yeah. What are we talking about tonight?
We are talking about Green Lantern Dark number one, the one of six. Now, although they're all, I have to ask this question. They're all going to be this length?
All the Elseworlds stuff?
Yeah. They're all going to be this size?
I believe so.
Yeah, because this is an oversized issue, which I don't think I would, I didn't pay much attention to. So I was not expecting an oversized issue, but that's what this is. So this is a one of six.
Yes. And I do actually, you know, not to think about it because, you know, obviously I read this digitally. So I actually did go on to mycomicshop.com to order some things. One was obviously a copy of this. It makes sense, actually, for it to be a longer story. Yeah, six issues and everything, but like longer because weren't all Elseworlds prestige format books?
I believe that is correct.
So if they're holding to that, that would make sense. But yeah. But this one is chapter one called Lantern's Light. Our writer is Tate Bromble. Our artist and cover is by Werther Deladera. Our colorist is Giovanna Nero. Our letterer is Tom Napolitano. And then we have variant covers. Assistant editor is Ash Padilla. Editor is Ben Abernathy and Andrea Shea. Executive editor, Chris Conroy. And the Tangent Universe based on a concept by Dan Jurgens. But this takes place over in New England, where a young girl is telling a story at a local gathering that basically helps catch us up to where we are in this universe. Basically, there was a crisis or even Blackest Night style type event that happened that the heroes all tried to fight back the impending doom. Many of them fell, and the world didn't quite end, but fell to darkness anyways. And a bunch of beasts and evil thrived. And then to quote the comic itself, which I'll do here and there throughout this recap, just to help make sense of things. The worst of which is Grundy, who sows his seed and harvests our dead, then sets them upon us to feast. But apparently one of the heroes still remains, and it is the Green Lantern, because for when it was the brightest, she was the sun, and now in the darkness, she is the flame. So this young girl, Lunette, is telling a story very bombastically to a crowd of onlookers, telling that, you know, keep the light aflame and help, you know, keep the belief going and fight back the monsters. Her mother and her brother Kane watch on, and her brother Kane is obviously very skeptical about the Green Lantern, a very, atypical teenage boy who's very cynical about everything.
He's an a-hole. For most of this issue, he's an out-and-out a-hole. Come on. He's really unlikable. I mean, when you get to the end and he almost by default, because being out of selfish needs, he becomes less of one. But yeah, he's a character that's really hard not to want to just bitch slap it, like by the second panel that he's in.
To be fair, a lot of us at that age were probably deserved a bitch slap of our own.
Don't coddle the youth, Chad. That's what's wrong with America these days.
I know I did. Anyways, after this gathering, mother and the two kids go to the local diner, which has some people just playing a guitar and messing around. The barkeep comes up and serves everybody dinner. And basically what we just witnessed was essentially a kind of talent show of sorts for the local community, because as the story she told at the very beginning is true, the world is imperiled and not a very fun or bright place. It's a place where the sun doesn't shine, and when it does, it doesn't shine for very long. It's a very dark, gloomy, rundown, post-apocalyptic type of future, and people are just kind of holding on to whatever they can. And so these little performances help keep everybody connected and entertained in an otherwise very bleak world. Meanwhile, brother is criticizing sister for believing in the story of the Green Lantern and getting on his mom's ass for letting her believe this kind of stuff anyways. There are some strangers in the diner that they don't recognize, and Kane, the brother, is talking a bit about, you know, we should protect ourselves first and not let strangers near us and so on and so forth. But meanwhile, while they're talking about all of this, somebody who looks like Green Lantern comes in. Hooded cape, staff, lantern on the end of a stick. Lunette goes running up to her, only to it for it to be revealed to be one of Grundy's monsters. And all hell breaks loose in the diner. And the mother of Lunette says, "You're not going to hurt my daughter." Chops off the hand of this creature and then stabs it in the face. And the hand lands in the drink of what turns out to be the real Green Lantern, who's at the other end of the diner just having a quiet drink. She lights up, takes out the monster, and walks out the door. Lunette goes chasing after her and says, like, "Hey, you know, I swore I'd tell you thank you. You know, she's not going to leave us. She's going to protect us. We need you, Lantern." She said, "Your heroes all died long ago. All that's left are monsters," as she goes off into the night. She warned everybody to the best you can do, because that monster was a scout. And the minute it spotted you guys and me, it became a herald, and Grundy's on his way here. So everybody douse the lights and hide. Lunette doesn't want to turn out the light. Her mother insists that she do, because look, we're just people. We're not heroes. So Lunette, does, but then after everybody goes to bed, she takes her lantern out and runs off to go find Green Lantern. Grundy is on his way with his horde of monsters. She finds Lantern, the Green Lantern, in the woods talking to herself. I assume we'll learn more about that later on as the series goes on. But she's clearly talking to somebody within this green light floating around her. And she says, "Hey, are you depressed? Because the sun went away. My mom thinks there's a vitamin D shortage making everybody depressed." That doesn't turn out to be the truth, of course. And she says, "I heard the legends, Green Lantern. I know that you raised Grundy from the dead, and that's why she..." And then she says, "I did not." And she says, "Then who did?" And Lantern shows her lantern and says, "Get lost. I can't help you." So she's talking about how the power works a little bit. She's saying wherever that she goes, evil's following her, and they're drawn to her flame. So, did your legends ever tell you that? The mother is, meanwhile, wakes up and finds out the Lunette is gone. And Kane says, you know, she's gone after her. "I told you those stories where she's..." And the mom's like, "Just stay here. Tell Bork what's going on," which is the barkeep, "while I search around." And then all of this pestering that Lunette is doing to the Green Lantern really pisses her off. And she finally says, "My name is Rena Mori. I did not choose this title or this lantern. I am not some god to be prayed to or worshipped. I was a child." This world went to hell, and now I'm expected to fix it. I didn't create these monsters. This darkness belongs to those before me, long dead. I have lost everything. I am as lost as all of you, so keep your legends. I want no part of them. I am no lighthouse, not even a beacon. I am a funeral pyre who's just too stubborn to die. Meanwhile, Lunette, the mother is still searching for Lunette and then thinks she finds her, but it just turns out to be one of Grundy's monsters. She suddenly swarmed, attacked, and killed by all of them. And as she screams off in the distance, Lunette hears her and goes running to the sound. And before she leaves, she tells Green Lantern, you know, why save us? Why save me just to run away and let us die? None of this is our fault either. And she says goodbye. And meanwhile, the town is besieged by all of Grundy and his monsters. And she stumbles across her mother, and it's too late. The mother is taken over. Kane knocks her aside and finds her just in time to get her away from them. And they are finding that the monsters are being drawn to the light of the Green Lantern. The Green Lantern lights up and kills a good number of the horde. At least it looks like it. And the next wave is ongoing while she tells everybody else to say, hey, Grundy's coming, but you guys need to go hide. Get to the church and block the doors, and I'll try and hold them off as long as I can. She erects a shield and tries to hold the spell as long as she can. And she says, these spells are my wishes that I'm willing into existence. And that triggers Lunette to go, well, why don't you just wish these things dead? Because they're already dead. And she says, Grundy's got power of his own, and the woman who gave me this lantern, she brought him back to life for a chance to avenge his murder or something stupid. But Grundy never returned to his grave. Maybe his vengeance was never satisfied, or maybe the plants that fed on his swamp drowned corpse were enchanted by her spell to do the same. Either way, wherever he goes, the dead rise too. So she stays behind with Green Lantern while everybody else goes to hide. And she says, we're going to fight till the end. Then the lantern burns out. Grundy says, at last, now I may rest. They all pile on top of Lunette and the Green Lantern when all of a sudden the light really explodes. And not only is Green Lantern a light herself, but the lantern that Lunette carries is also turned green and flaming bright. Now she says, Green Lantern tells Lunette to wish upon her flame. And she says, if the dead are already risen, let us give them back themselves. Let us give them back their will. And then in death, the dead will protect the living. So she basically gives free will back to the zombified corpses who it looks like turn and attack Grundy. And the town is saved. Lunette is reunited with her brother. And the idea is, my wish is now for the story to spread like wildfire to towns and lands and peoples I do not know, so that they too can share this lantern's light. And then together, all of us will hold back the night. And that is the end of chapter one.
Good job, Chet.
What do you think?
Overall, I did like it. Like I said to you, probably because of my expectation, I was not expecting this to be like 40 something pages. So I think that's kind of like, that kind of threw me off when I was trying to process everything that was going on. In a way, there's a pretty good lesson of storytelling here that we're not getting in the other books, because they do. There's a lot of questions about what's going on here, and we get a lot of answers in the same issue. The other thing that surprised me a little bit before I go back to that point is that I guess it was nice that you kind of figured like this was going to be like an ongoing struggle just with Grundy and Orbit the zombies, but probably I'm going to guess that like every issue is going to be dealing with a different aspect of the darkness.
That's what
I'm kind of guessing. So because they also show like, you know, like, because obviously this was the zombie aspect, but there's also like, you know, like werewolves or vampires and things like that, other creatures that they showed kind of alluded to. But so that story structure kind of surprised me a little bit, but it's cool that, yeah, in a ways, Grundy's kind of like Black Hand here, raising the dead for his own purposes. The fact that the lantern is not really a beacon of evil. It's just the fact that because of Rena's predecessor raised Grundy, so that's why he keeps seeking the lantern.
Yeah, the Tangent Lantern, who I don't think she was ever given a name, but the Tangent Lantern we used to know, we assume that's her predecessor.
We assume, yes. So they explain that why they're after the light. I do kind of like the fact that in a way that the way they're able to use the other lantern, just the regular lantern, and that kind of can be. So again, it's kind of more like it's a variation on the Kilowog thing, that it's the warrior, not the weapon, in a way, to a certain extent. I did like the art. It's stylistic. I mean, it's very stylistic. There's no doubt about that. But I did like the art. I also thought it was somewhat interesting that Rena kind of looks like the Wicked Witch of the West. The way she's drawn. Maybe not necessarily by coincidence, but it's certainly you get that impression a lot in a lot of panels, the way her cape hangs over her face and things like that, that's very much the vibe it kind of gives. So there's a lot of promise here. I think it was, like I said, it was kind of hard to, when I read it, since I only got to read it tonight before we did I thought it was going to be a challenge to recap. Probably I could have probably done it, but I'm glad you volunteered. But I thought it was pretty good. So at least it probably establishes kind of like the routine of what we're going to see. So maybe it's almost going to be like the Incredible Hulk, where she's going to be going from TV show, where she's going to be going from area to area, dealing with threats and things like that. And maybe eventually get a little more hint of if that's the intent, to give a hint of where this darkness came from to begin with, because nobody really knows. So.
Yeah. No, for sure. I just so you spoke a bit about the art. The art is by artist Werther Delladera. Werther really made a name for himself on, like, I'll say it again. Something is Killing the Children over at Boom, which is one of the biggest indie titles currently out there. Something is Killing the Children spun off into kind of expanding the universe with a title, its first spinoff title called House of Slaughter. And House of Slaughter had Werther do a little bit of things here and there. And then obviously they were talking about starting that book up, and the way they did that with Werther Delladera and James Tynion, who is the writer for Something Is Killing the Children, is Tynion joined to help flesh out the side universe of House of Slaughter, but did so with co-writer Tate Bromble, who he eventually turned the writing duties of that particular spinoff over to, so Tynion and Werther could focus on Something Is Killing the Children proper. So this is your look. If you've ever heard your friends out there talking about Something Is Killing the Children and House of Slaughter, and this book caught your eye out there, people, and you're interested in reading more stuff written and drawn like this, Something Is Killing the Children is for you. Which is something I told Myron before a few weeks back, and I don't know if you listen to every episode, Mark, of their show, but Myron mentioned on a relatively recent episode that he took my advice and started reading Something Is Killing the Children, and there was a point where he just couldn't put it down, and he burned through like the first trade or two. So if you guys liked what you read here, Something Is Killing the Children is for you. But anyways, I thought there was lots of interesting stuff in here. The fact that it's the Tangent Lantern, but not, because, you know, just like any other Green Lantern, it was passed down to the next bearer, was interesting. Gives us something else to play with. But also, too, and I haven't gone back and read the Tangent stuff. I do have the Tangent comics trade paperback volume 1 and 3. I don't have volume 2. But I haven't read it. I do remember the Tangent Lantern's ability to kind of raise the dead briefly to let them kind of finish their unfinished business thing. So that was interesting when they were talking about how Grundy coming back was her fault, because like she did that for Grundy, but it turns out because of all of the magic inherent in Grundy's death and his resurrection and all of that other stuff that backfired, I guess. But what's interesting is, though I didn't read it, I did pull up a kind of like Wikipedia breakdown, like on dc.fandom.com, of the powers of Green Lantern, the Tangent Green Lantern. And obviously, besides resurrection, it's teleportation, dimensional travel, enhanced senses, intangibility, and decelerated aging. None of which mentions other stuff like what she does here with the shield and casting spells and saying, like, you know, doing the whole like, hey, wish on my power thing. That was interesting. And now, like I said, it could be in some of the Tangent stuff that I just forgot and need to reread it. But it looks like they're expanding the power set a little bit, which sounds like some fun stuff to me, because they're not going crazy with it. But you see little hints of it here and there, especially with the shield.
Yeah, the shield was interesting. The shield, the concept, not that it's necessarily overly original, because it's not like a regular Green Lantern couldn't do something like that. But
yeah,
I thought that was cool, though. It did seem like a weird kind of plan, from the perspective that if she wasn't going on the offense at all and she was using all her power just to keep the shield, it's kind of like, well, you know, you're not going to be able to hold it forever. So it seemed like that is something you would do when you were literally working in Tangent, boom, 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 with somebody else who was going on the offense, and that was one thing that struck me. But
yeah, she specifically says, these spells are my wishes that I'm willing into existence. So I don't remember that from the other Tangent Lantern, but like I said, it's been a long time since I've read any Tangent Lantern stuff. I think the last time I read it was when I was rereading the Ion series, and she just kind of pops up in that one issue of Ion, right?
Yeah, I think you're correct. Now, they could also with this be tying her powers more just into magic based, because of the fact, just like Alan, because of the fact that they're tying this Tangent Lantern into with Bundy, with Grundy, excuse me. Al Bundy has nothing to do with this, but Grundy. So Al Bundy would have made a really interesting story, but that's for another day. That's another Elseworlds. But yeah, so maybe because it's Grundy and the Green Lantern and they're playing off that relationship, maybe that's why her power is going to be a little more magical.
That's nice. Because they don't make it necessarily clear that Grundy was taken out, I wouldn't be surprised if we run across him. This was a more long-term defeat for him than recent any other attempts to fight him back. And maybe it'll take him a bit longer to get back on his feet, and he'll still be out and about. But I don't know, because it's comics. Like, if you don't see it happen on panel, right, you gotta assume, like, okay, it's possible we'll see him again, right?
Yeah, because it's based on an assumption.
Yeah,
they assume that, oh, the Walking Dead, now that they have their own willpower back and are going to be basically a shield and go out, or want revenge for the person who, you know, has kind of like ruined their afterlife, that they're going to be able to kill Grundy, and there's no guarantee that they'd be able to do that anyway. I would not necessarily be surprised. I mean, who knows? Maybe if they follow this, David Banner, Incredible Hulk kind of theme, and go into every single issue deals with a different threat, and there's a big bad behind each threat, that maybe you fight, like, the final issue will be all the big threats have survived, and she's got to take them all out together.
Yeah. I'm curious too, because it's very hard, because it says New England, but in terms of like actually comparing a one for one map from this final page versus anything that resembles a New England map, Do you think what we're going to be seeing then is her, the story we got in chapter one is where it says Lantern's Light, and then these little bullet points or dots along the way, and we're ending up wherever this final marker is on the Forgotten Lands?
I'm going to assume, if I had to, unless that's supposed to be just a compass, which it probably isn't supposed to just be, that we will probably end up down there at the end.
Would that be like Boston? Or no, Plymouth?
We're at the end?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'd have to really look at a map of the U.S., assuming, of course, working on the massive assumption, which probably is accurate, though, that everything on the right side is actual legitimate coastline. I would assume Lantern's Light probably not. I think they may be in Massachusetts, unless that's supposed to be Maine. But again, it's kind of hard without. I'd have to look at the map to try to judge, because again, we don't know if some pieces are missing in other places. I don't want to speculate any more than we are. But yeah, I'm going to assume we're probably going to end up at the bottom. But then again, this is just one little mini. We assume it's almost like an island at this point, or a subcontinent. So we don't really know where they're going with this literally. So it's kind of hard to know where we're going to end up. But yeah, it's a safe bet, probably, unless she ends up going somehow, gets over the river, gets over the water, and then they just change the map and have her going in that direction. But yeah, I would tend to assume that we're going to end up at the bottom of this map.
You know, it's always interesting when we have something good that we enjoy, because I feel like we have less to say about the things we enjoy and more to say about the things we have problems with. But I just straight out enjoyed this to the point where I went and made sure I ordered some physical copies, and I got the regular cover, and I got the I forget the name of the artist variant, but the one who drew her properly, because there's a variant cover that's really well done. It's very like realism looking, but it's also like very sensual in the way it's drawn, but it's very clearly the original Tangent Lantern and not Rena Mori. But there is a cover, there are two different covers of Rena, one that's more cartoonish that looks closer to what we have here, and the other that's more realistic. I got the one that's more realistic, and then the same version of that one, but that's also the foil cover. So I got three different covers for this. And then for whatever it's worth, I also got Superman number 19, because I read that today and was really impressed with that issue. So, but yeah, I thought it was weird. I always think it's weird that we have less to say about things we like and more to say about things we need to nitpick.
I think they could be in Maine. I am looking at a map. Looking at a map now. I think you might be correct that the bottom of the map is Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think that thing is that symbol on the bottom of the map is somewhere around Boston or closer to Plymouth, based on what I'm looking at. I'm not sure.
It could be it might be Boston. Again, the map that I'm looking at of the US right now, I can't, just by looking at it online, like when I clicked expand it, I can't get any can't get super close, but it does look like, which is what I originally thought, that piece that was sticking out at the bottom and kind of curves was Massachusetts, but I wanted to see they're probably in Maine right now. They're probably in what's supposed to be Maine.
All right, anything else about this one?
No, it's a promising start. So
yeah, just... I mean, the fact that we get a new lantern instead of the same Tangent Lantern, you know, it gives us even more kind of a buffer zone in terms of turning off our brains to compare it to anything else, because it's a different wielder in a different position in a world that's maybe still, because of everything that's happened, maybe more magical than it was before. So like, there's all kinds of room for this to grow beyond the very little stuff that was already established for the Tangent Lantern. So I do like that this one is just going to be kind of whatever it wants to be, and we can just enjoy it for what it is, as long as we still enjoy the way in which the story is told by Tate and then the way in which it's drawn by Werther. So,
yeah, fingers crossed. I have to be a little skeptical just because we've had nice starts to things before, but at least this is its own thing. So there's a much greater chance, because of it's not a slave to real continuity, that there's a much greater chance that this thing can actually pay off.
For sure. All right. What's next?
Well, as you kind of mentioned to me, but I had already heard about the, not a surprise, because we kind of knew this was coming, that Blade is officially off the 2025 release schedule for Marvel, the MCU. Not surprising, because it wasn't mentioned during Comic-Con and it was completely not mentioned during D23. So it's off. It has no release date at the moment. Probably a safe bet. If it's ever going to happen at all, it ain't going to happen until after 2026, because of the fact that they have a few movies, they have a few spots in their release schedule to fill in between the two Avengers movies. But you damn well know they're not going to do Blade, even if they could, because it's really on him. That was the problem with sticking Blade in the Multiverse Saga to begin with. It always seemed like it really is completely unimportant, so why do it? But
it's not complicated. Like, you can, it could be the cheapest made Marvel movie since the start of the MCU, and it could practical effects and everything, you very minimal CGI. I don't understand what is so fucking complex, but whatever.
Well, that is one question. That is the question of how we've gotten to this point. But the fact that we are at this point, I think we already knew, at least since like the beginning of the year, that they were going to start downsizing their release schedules. So it made always made sense, since this was one of the, this was like literally the only one that was nowhere near going into production yet. And this could turn out to be one of the first, if not the first, Marvel project that was officially announced and had a star. And it had 8,000 directors and 8,000 scripts that finally gets the plug pulled on it. Though I wish, if that's the case, and they probably won't do it. They're not doing it, because even though they may fully believe, well, yeah, we're never going to do this movie, it's much easier to say, well, we haven't given up on this project. It's just, you know, we've had to reevaluate and you know, restructure some things, and we fully plan on coming back to. It would be easier just if they would just have the balls to just say, it's possible we'll do this movie, but right now we really have no plans to revisit this project anytime soon. But going along with that, we now, thanks to Tom Holland, which is not, this is also not a surprise, that the plan is anyway to start filming Spider-Man 4 over the summer next year, which makes perfect sense, because the logical belief, along with the rumors, have been for a while that Spider-Man 4 is going to fall between the two Avengers movies. So it would make sense that if they're going to do that, they got to get their show on the road and they got to get this movie filmed. So we don't know if he's going to be in Avengers Doomsday. Do you almost think that he would be? But depending on what they're doing, it still might make sense that they don't do that, and that he only shows up in after his own movie show up in Secret Wars. But it depends what, you know, when, I guess, in a time frame, does Spider-Man 4 take place on Battleworld? We have no idea what they're doing with Spider-Man 4, but it should be one of the movies, because I think there's some release spots for two movies between the Avengers movies that have not been claimed yet. So Spider-Man will almost assuredly be one. There's a lot of rumors that Doctor Strange will be the other, which probably would make sense. Certainly, it's probably more relevant than, let's say, Thor. Of course, poor Shang-Chi. That's what, again, shows you the Marvel's lack of vision. One of the few breakout hits that they brand new that they had, certainly theatrically, since Endgame, and they have shafted that character and that whole little world they built, and by greenlighting projects that nobody really gave a shit about instead. But that's our little MCU news, I suppose. Alrighty, moving on. Before we do a very little bit of feedback today, let me play ever so. I think there's only two things I have to catch up on for what has Mark seen. As I mentioned at the very end of last episode, did see Joker for Lea Do. And as I kind of suspected, and I mentioned this to you the week before, Probably because I had no great desire to see this movie to begin with, and all the hype, as in negative hype, was high. You know, was so deep in this movie that my expectations were even lower. I mean, I'm not going to tell you I liked it, because I didn't, but I didn't hate it either. I didn't hate it. I think I understand what Phillips was going for here to a certain extent in this movie. It doesn't mean it wasn't a misfire. It doesn't mean his approach was probably ill-conceived, but I would say it's definitely a movie that most people are better off watching when it's on Max at this point, which is probably where most people will watch it, since no one went to go see it. And I did see last week, I saw Smile 2. Now, I liked the first Smile. I didn't love it. I liked it. And this one is definitely more ambitious. Now, whether I think it's a better movie or not, I don't know. I think it's up in the air. If you like the first movie, you'll probably like this one. Naomi Scott, I really like in general, and she's really, really, really good in this movie. She's like way better than the material. But it does kind of have a redundancy to it, which I think they established this in the first movie about, hey, what's real, what's not. And when you watch this movie, you'll understand what I'm talking about, that by the time, as the movie plays out and you get closer to the ending, I think bogs you down or weighs down your possible enjoyment of the movie. Has an interesting ending, which won't work for everybody either. But if I had to recommend seeing either one of those in the theater, I'd recommend seeing Smile 2. But I don't know if I'd really recommend necessarily having to see either one. And that's it. And Venom, who knows, we may actually get a movie episode soon, Chad, because I'm going to assume you're going to go see Venom sooner rather than later.
I'm going to try to, yeah. I will say I do have a What Has Chad Seen, which is far overdue in terms of where it appeared on my movies I'm looking forward to list. I finally actually sat down and watched Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, on one of my trips to this Target and Walmart, I was walking around and, you know, looking at some vinyls and stuff like that. I actually recently picked up the Switch game that came out the other day, Mario Party Jamboree, and I was checking the action figure aisles for, you know, that effigy figure and things like that. So I just, you know, kind of checking around the general area, and I saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was out on Blu-ray a couple weeks ago or whatever. And I took it home, and I redeemed the digital code, but hadn't sat down to watch it until very recently. Really good movie. I enjoyed it. I don't have any real problems with it. I will say the only thing I would maybe say is the stuff with was it Proxima Caesar? Yeah, Proxima or Proximus or whatever.
Proximus, I believe.
Once we got to him, things moved so fast because, you know, obviously we needed to wrap up the film or whatever, but I was expecting to spend more time with him and have the apes of that village kind of be of the Eagle Village or whatever, kind of be more under his thumb, and, you know, him trying to manipulate Noah and all that stuff. But no, things went pretty quick once we got there. Other than that, you know, one of the things that, you know, I was curious about going into this film or leading up to it was, you know, the trilogy that came before it with Caesar, each movie had successively less screen time for humans as things went on. And I was wondering, like, could a Planet of the Apes film with barely any humans on screen succeed? And I don't know how box office or critical reception was for this film, but I enjoyed it. And yes, we still have a human character, and the human character talks, which was a spoiler, I guess. But so I guess you still have your human POV character there. But and based on how the movie ended, it's very clear we're expecting more films. So like another trilogy out of this. So we're going to still be seeing more of humans, but I thought it was a pretty well done film. I enjoyed it.
I think from what I remember, I mean, I've been, obviously it's been a while since I saw it. I still liked it. I thought it was a little long, but Noah, he is a worthy successor to Caesar, even though obviously he's a different type of character with different goals, but it follows on the tradition of what Caesar, of the Caesar was compelling. And I think that kind of encapsulates his Noah's best quality. I alluded to with the, when we talked about it way back when, that I don't know if I'm a fan of the direction they seemingly are going with May and the humans, because it does seem like at this point we should be beyond this, at this point that we should have already been beyond this part of the human ape dynamic. We should be beyond it. So I don't really know where it's going to go. Unless the only thing missing is that we never really had nuclear war, so maybe that's the only thing missing to try to make this similar to try to, you know, mirror a little bit more the original series. But I don't know. That concerns me a little. But it was good, and it was good character, and of course having the Caesar funeral scene was very important. I'm really glad they did that, not just for to tie everything together, but just because I think it was important for us to get the full closure, you know, on the last trilogy.
Yeah, I think that's the thing everybody's speculating in the future is, like, in order to get to the point where there's like there are no more humans, or to the point where you know humans are feral or almost a myth, or you have to get to that classic Planet of the Apes post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland type thing, that's what a lot of people are speculating that we're heading towards, I guess, is the last gasp of intelligent humanity to try and take back the planet will end in sort of their own downfall and holocaust, I guess.
That's probably, because realistically speaking, ultimately, you would think that's the only thing left, or the only justification in having these enclaves, and more than enclaves, that you literally have these bunkers of human beings that are still alive and are fully functional, that have not been infected by the virus and everything else. So of course, it could have evolved at this point where maybe it wouldn't affect them actually at all. But they're pretty damn careful. I mean, there's, I guess, circumstantial evidence to say that might be the case, because May doesn't get it. Nothing happens, at least short term, nothing happens to May where she either gets sick or she starts losing her ability to speak or anything like that. But I don't know. It, like I said, I think they should be far enough along in the story now, since it's, what, several hundred years, whatever, after Caesar. That are
300, I think, something like that.
I think it's around, I think that's the magic number. It's somewhere around 300. That I think they should be beyond that, because again, it's like you come to the basic question, when is it actually going to be the Planet of the Apes if it's still not the, I mean, I guess we can assume it essentially is, because they are the dominant species on land anyway. As far as we know, though, we keep getting small snapshots of little areas here and little areas there, so we really don't know what the world is like. But I guess we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, my next watching project is the Terminator franchise, because I have them all now. I think I don't have the TV show, obviously, but
neither do I. I've never really watched much of the
TV. I've actually heard good things about the TV show, but I've never seen Genesis. I've never seen Dark Fate. I've never seen Salvation. And as far as I'm concerned, it's been a long time since I've seen the first Terminator. But I've seen Terminator 2 and 3 so many times, I'm pretty sure I could, you know, play them in my head without having to watch them.
we'll catch up. Then we can do a whole Terminator episode, or we can do a Terminator episode. I like Salvation is odd, because it's the most un-Terminator movie of all of them, since it's the only one that doesn't involve time travel. It all takes place in current time, whenever that current time is. There is no, and when you watch the movie, you'll understand plot wise why that's the case. Now, I really like Genesis. I know some people don't. I thought Genesis was very clever, and it sucks for me that they never did a sequel to Genesis, because that was literally the only Terminator movie that ever 100%. You can make a case with the deleted scenes, I think, from the original Terminator, that there were the deleted scenes, like when they found, I think, the hand and things like that in the press, that made it clear that, oh, there could be a sequel. But Genesis was the only one that absolutely 100% made it clear that they were planning on doing a sequel, and you kind of had an idea. They had set things up nicely going forward, and we never got to see it. So that, I'll be interested in your thoughts on that one. Dark Fate, I thought, was horrible. Dark Fate was, that was even more of a rehash than everything else.
Yeah, and it'll take me a while to get through them, because I'm going to start at the beginning, because like I said, it's been a while. But yeah, I'll watch them, you know, when the mood strikes, but in order. Because, you know, there are days when you clock out and you're just like, you know what, I just want to watch the very next episode of New Girl, or, you know, something to just sit and turn my mind off and just laugh.
You can turn your face off too, but then you won't be able to watch or listen. All right. So let's just do one little piece of feedback and then we call it a day, just because it's fresh. So let's do Zanganov's Sorrow Lantern and Other Emotional Possibilities email. I've only started reading Green Lantern comics again, and thanks to Mosaic Comics on YouTube, there's your plug, Dan, I was able to catch up on the stories to the point where the Sorrow Lantern being added as a spectrum of emotion keeps bugging me. There's so much that the past stories regarding the additions of new spectrum cores would have to be, I guess, revised or modified to fit Blackest Night and other Lantern stories moving forward, not having, and Sorrow Lantern feels odd since it's new, basically. My email is my confusion, since bad taste feelings about that edition are moving forward to this new Fractal story, which makes me think that we're going to get more cores. The Green Lantern using whatever light they feel like can't be where it stops. It's like messing with the established light. I look forward to making a bingo card for whatever new colors we get in the future story. I'm not sure what Dimensional Lantern means, unless that's his handle.
That's his handle.
What I assumed. That's, but I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, so we should mention briefly that the ultimate irony with your appropriate rant, a mini rant about all these solicits that spoil everything, and yet they can have a solicit for Green Lantern in 18 that doesn't effing make it clear that, yes, this is going to be the end of the Darlin storyline. If you read it, I might imply it, but it doesn't say it all ends here. They don't make, so it's typical. It's like the one time you should be telling you a little bit more, like, hey, this is what ends the story. They don't tell you that. But apparently, yes, issue 18 is the end of this Darlin United Planets thing. Then we get another one shot, which is like, why do we really need a one shot? We're going to get a frack. You know, we're going to get.
They didn't make the most of the last one they gave.
I know. It's like you're starting over and you have issue 19. You can't begin the story in 19. But yes, there's going to be a Fractal Lantern one shot. And then the story actually begins in full in 19. I think what's going to happen is exactly what the title implies. Because something's happened to the emotional spectrum, it's temporarily allowed this thing to break off in pieces and different directions and things to form that are not supposed to be there and shouldn't be there. So I suspect whatever they do, at least we're going to be told that all or maybe one thing will slide through, but these pieces eventually will be put back together and the emotional spectrum will be put back the way it's supposed to be. I certainly don't think we're going to get cores, because by the very nature, but the very nature of the Fractal thing makes me think we're going to have, we're going to have a Sorrow Lantern, and we're going to have a Happiness Lantern, and we're going to have a Depression Lantern and things like that. But I don't necessarily think they're going to be a core. They could just be like almost like solar flares from the emotional spectrum, and it hits somebody and boom, this is what they become.
Yeah. And I said it before, in this case, in actually a relatively super recent episode, but in this case, I had the foresight to go ahead and pull it up this time. The whole stuff with like the Sorrow Lanterns and these other emotional things, like, it bothers me too, because like I have the page in front of me. When Monk and Indigo One first show up on the scene, and this is towards the beginning of Blackest Night, when Hal and Barry are with each other and they're standing in the Justice League headquarters with Mara, Adam, and Firestorm before Firestorm's girlfriend is killed. Indigo One says, and then there was light. For 700 years, the universe was nothing but blinding white light. And then the darkness fought back and the white light was splintered. Every sentient being born from the light now contributes to its emotional spectrum, and our state of being adds to its respective light, and it can be collected and condensed into power. And then she starts talking about specifics with relation to specific colors. But the white light was splintered is basically all you need to know for why we have the emotional spectrum to begin with. So each of these emotional spectrums, according to this, should have been existing around the same time in the universe. So how is it we keep stumbling across new, you know, core tenets and powers that are essential to the building blocks of the universe that have remained hidden after so many years, like the Sorrow Lantern? That doesn't make it, the ultraviolet stuff and all the other things, it doesn't make any sense to me. And what was that? The pale lanterns? We never even got an answer for those, right? Like what those actually were.
What do you mean? The paling?
The paling, yeah. Because that was supposedly a piece of the spectrum as well.
I don't remember how we I know we speculated because they were very indigo like.
But I mean, regardless, this idea that these hidden lights keep getting discovered, these, and they've all been in existence since the light fought darkness fought back and the light was splintered early on in the universe's origins. And we keep discovering new ones all the time. That's a bit crazy. And that's part of the reason it's so frustrating that we're not getting answers about what the hell is up with the emotional spectrum, because it is a little asinine to expect people to swallow it easy that they're, oh, that just another new lantern emotional thing that has popped up that is, and then there's an entire core or even a singular lantern. It doesn't matter. This power exists out there. We're only just now discovering. Well, we can't keep swallowing that pill. So the idea that, quote unquote, something is wrong with the emotional spectrum is still all we have is crazy.
Well, yeah, but except I think it's fully being hinted at that this isn't something that ever existed before. And it's only existing now, A, because there's something naturally wrong with the spectrum on its own, or Asshat Tharos is the one who has caused something to, almost like maybe the emotional spectrum pushing back against what Tharos is trying to do. So I think, remember, Jeremy told us that he was going to be doing something with the emotional spectrum and he wasn't sure if people were going to like it, but that he thought that was like the next almost like a natural progression or the where it should go or could go. I forget how he phrased it. So I don't think they're going to try to give us a retcon that these things have always existed. Now, if you want to play devil's advocate, you also have another out here, because this could be a byproduct, or this possibility could exist only because the emotional spectrum's reservoir was filled. And don't forget, and I still think there's a damn good story in here at some point, and I don't know if it's going to be this one, but don't forget, there should logically be payoff at some point to the fact that the emotional spectrum, when the reservoir was refilled, it was not refilled, quote unquote, properly, because Parallax never went with them. They were one entity short. So you would have to, so there's a story out there waiting to be told about, even if it's just that the friggin' yellow lanterns eventually run out of power a lot sooner than they should because the yellow was never replenished naturally. But to me, that's another possible asterisk to how you could explain stuff, because when the reservoir, which was always a dumb idea, offense to Robert Venditti, but I think that was always a dumb idea. But the fact that they did that we know it was never filled, never, it would be ironic, of course, if the yellow lanterns ran out of power because it wasn't refilled, because it was Sinestro who walled off Parallax to make sure he couldn't go on Kyle's little journey with everybody else. That I think there's a great story to be told there, because
you know, what's interesting about that, if that needs to be fixed, now we have at least two Parallaxes.
Yeah, that is true. We do have.
We have a Parallax to spare.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we and as cool as it is on the surface to have Convergence Parallax, but just because at the very least he looks like classic Parallax, considering they can't do jack shit with him, and they've written him horribly ever since the actual Converge. The only part of that event that he was written halfway decent, and even though they still got the events wrong and the history wrong, was the two-issue mini with him and Kyle. That was about the only time that Parallax seemed to act and behave more like you would expect Hal Jordan Parallax to behave. That in the series they didn't, and when King was writing them in the Telos thing, and obviously Venditti didn't do a good job, and then that Green Arrow mini, that Green Arrow's issue we still haven't talked about, I think, because it's so atrocious, that Parallax appearance. But yeah, we have at least two in our universe. We have at least two Parallax. So I think there's outs to how to explain why these things exist now, and I think they're going to directly tie it to whatever Tharos was doing. But I can understand concern, because they shouldn't be long term. There shouldn't be more cores, because they follow the base, the Roy G. Biv thing. They followed it naturally. So, but we'll see. I'm more interested, certainly, going into that story, along with finally ending the United Planets and Tharos thing. So that's a plus. So it is going to be just a hair under two full years, but way too long.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
All right. I do have one other thing.
Damn it, Chad. No, go ahead.
I placed an order for it, and I got confirmation that the shipping label was created today. So hopefully it'll be in my hands by this weekend, which hopefully means I can film this weekend. But I ordered a case of the Funko 70th anniversary mystery minis. There's 12 in a case. And you can get things like Mechagodzilla and Mothra and Anguirus, Ghidorah, Rodan, Gigan, Hedorah, Destroya, Space Godzilla, Shin Godzilla, and two other Godzillas. I will do an unboxing on our YouTube channel, Lantern Cast Vids. So if you are subscribed to Lantern Cast Vids, you will see that show up in your feed when it's ready. If you're not subscribed to Lantern Cast Vids and want to check that out, go subscribe to Lantern Cast Vids, and you will be notified when it pops up, assuming you've clicked the bell icon for notifications. But yeah, this is me saying I have not yet received the product, and I'm not going to tell you the video will be going up. I'm just going to tell you subscribe in advance so you know when it does go up. Otherwise, the next time I mention this, it'll be, hey, the video is up now. Because the last time I tried to export a video, all hell broke loose and I was significantly delayed. And speaking of this thing, I have watched every unboxing video YouTube has to offer for this, I believe. And only one person who of the videos, because I've seen videos of people opening anywhere between one to four or five of these boxes, like not like a case, but the individual boxes. And I've seen several videos where people had a whole case, and only one of the videos where someone opened a whole case was one of these people so crazily lucky that he got one of everything. Which is insane to me, because Godzilla, Mechagodzilla, and Mothra and Anguirus are 1 in 6s, but Space Godzilla and Shin Godzilla are both 1 in 72s. So he got 2 1 in 72s in his case, and then one of everything else, despite the rarity on all of them. So I'm really hoping I get crazy lucky, like whatever that dude got for his case. Otherwise, I'm expecting duplicates and having to either continually hunt for what I'm looking for, or just outright buy whatever I'm missing on eBay.
So how many figures are in a case? How many figures are in a case?
How many figures are there? 12 figures in a case and 12 figures in the set.
Yeah, hopefully at the very least, not counting. Well, now which one do you have? Do you just have Anguirus? I forget.
I currently have Anguirus. I have Mothra. Those are both 1 in 6. Oh, and right. I have Rodan, who is a 1 in 12.
All right. I knew you had two of those. I think it's Rodan. Maybe I didn't realize that you had. But so you need 9. You need 9. Hopefully, at the very least. See, if you didn't already have these 3, I would say hopefully you would get at least like 8 or 9 of the 12 figures that would be individual. Now that you already have 3, it automatically increases the odds you're going to get dupes.
Yeah.
So let's just hope worst case scenario you at least get 6 or 7 figures that you don't have, and then. But I did fairly well when I got the Lilo and Stitch blind box. I think it was a pack of 12 too. I only got like two or three dupes.
Yeah, my chase now, because I wanted Anguirus because he's one of my favorite kaiju, but he's a 1 in 6, so he's easy to get. But my other one is just I don't care what his rarity is. I'd want him next regardless. But his rarity just so happens to be a 1 in 72, and that's Space Godzilla. So that's my chase now. There's a lot of other, and I'll talk about it when I do the unboxing, but there's a lot of other kaiju that I would, from the Godzilla, like the Tohoverse and all that other stuff, that I would wish they would have rather made figures of, like, besides, like, Destroya. I don't really have a connection to Destroyer. Why Shin Godzilla was made into one of these, I don't know, because a lot of these are earlier Godzilla, you know, with the Mothra looks like the puppet Mothra, and Ghidorah is just Ghidorah. He's not even Mecha King Ghidorah. Rodan is the old school version of Rodan, where it was clearly just a dude in a suit instead of the puppet on a string. There's Gigan and Hedora and all that. Like, they all look like the classic monsters. So why Shin is a part of this is a bit crazy to me. And Destroya was like, what? That's like 90s, 2000s, something
it
like
was
that.
It was somewhere, because it wasn't that was like the last movie in that wave, right? That they made. Wasn't the last movie?
I think so. But yeah, it's just crazy to me. King Caesar should have been one of these for sure.
Oh yeah, no, and no Jet Jaguar.
That, yeah, no Ultraman, which I know is not necessarily, you know, but they did team ups every now and then, so Ultraman would have been cool in there. There's a bunch. Like I said, I'll talk about it in the video, because I think actually I haven't seen anything official, but everybody's rumored that is talking about this online is saying that they are expecting a wave 2 of these. So I think I'll put together a dream scenario wave 2 somewhere in that video when I make it. So
yeah, that should be cool.
But that'll be coming soon, as soon as I have the product in my hands and can get to filming.
Sounds like something to look forward to, Chad.
Well, if people want to look forward to our content and follow it wherever it may be, how do they do so?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. The email. Lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GLcast. Use that to find us. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Yeah. And speaking of, I'm not telling you anything about what's coming next, because we don't necessarily know, but we have at least 2 weeks before worth of episodes. So 2 episodes, I think, where before we have yet another new issue of Green Lantern, something to be reviewed. So, the next 2 episodes are to our discretion. So be surprised at whatever comes next,
including a skip week. Strong possibility of one of the two. 50% shot.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.